say too much, but let me just say this. Russia is aligned to certain situations. Remember we talked about Sunni and Shiite, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, Russia has quite a large Muslim population. Did you know that a third of the landmass of China is actually controlled by Muslims? Did you know that?
I didn't know it was as high as a third, no.
That's a huge amount of population.
Yeah.
And so this thing is sort of playing itself out all over the place. You see this sort of agenda. So how does that, you know, if we take the premise that it's better to scuttle the ship than it is to let it sink on its own, or to, you know, to maybe crash into something along the way. I mean, it's better for me to control the destruction.
Process. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a pretty good way to destroy things.
Yeah.
You know, pretty and good way so, to destroy it.
So to those that think Putin is independent and is just, you know, we may have forces, but they only, the control structure, the permanent control structure that we refer to is only on the Western side. Have you got any tooth fairies to slay regarding Putin?
No, look, I mean, it's not hard to understand that all of these people know each other.
Yeah, and it's coordinated.
I was in Geneva, I don't know how many years ago. I was in Geneva many years ago. And I happened to see some guys that I knew. I just knew them from being around. They were KGB, okay? This is during the Cold War. They were paying their hotel bill with an American Express card. Hmm. And I actually went up to them and started laughing. I said, "Are you kidding me?" And they said, "Well, we don't have credit cards in Russia. we don't have them."
Yeah, so we use yours, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a joke, right? Hmm. But everybody knows everybody. I mean, there's no, you know, there's this idea of boundaries and countries, and I mean, this is an illusion for the masses.
Yeah, it's the game of chess, because some people here in the West that feel that, you know, too much is you know, America's being too aggressive and all of this, and Russia's bang to rights to sort of, and has actually shown great restraint so far, and Putin's, you know, at least on the international stage, is a real alternative counterbalancing force. It's just really a show pony. It's a bit of Punch and Judy for the kids, isn't it?
Well, that's my belief, but I mean, yeah. I want to you know, maybe change the perspective a little bit. You know, what the puppet doesn't necessarily know it's a puppet, huh?
Oh, absolutely. So it helps if behavior is authentic.
Yeah, you know that. I mean, you don't have to put CIA agents in a plane and fly them into the World Trade Center for it to happen. No. You just have to create the circumstances and the environment for it to happen, and then it happens.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I don't want to go too far and say, you know, Putin has some guy whispering in his ear. He may well. But Putin may not have any idea that he's a pawn in this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I have to like
absolutely. Putin, you know? No, I'm talking when I mentioned, because a lot of people get hung up on the individual personalities and say, "Oh, but this one will be different." When I say Putin, I just mean the current leadership direction of Russia, rather than the individual himself. He may or may not be aware or in the frame. But many people are aware, and sometimes you hear about his obvious wealth. So I think he's doing really well out of it. So I think he's a smart guy, you know, a pretty smart guy.
He's certainly clever.
Yeah.
He certainly knows how to work the system, as he has done very well. So, I mean, the summary of all of that is that there's a reason for me to sink the ship. There's a reason for the elite to sink the ship before it crashes on its own. It's going to crash. There's no two ways about it.
How are they positioned? So is it own land? Is it own shares? Is it own gold and silver?
They own capital, and I mean permanent capital, real capital.
That's not the fiat currency. So just differentiating for everybody's benefit, real capital is not the fiat currency or money in the bank.
They own real things. They own, you know, I mean, let's talk for a second, which is more valuable, the oil or the pipeline, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the pipeline is way more important than the oil.
Yeah.
If you don't have the pipeline, you can't get the oil to the market, right?
Yeah.
So who's in control there? You can have all the oil you want, but if I own the pipeline, well, you're screwed. You're going to dance to my tune, right?
Yeah.
So distribution and mechanisms of distribution and technology and licenses and rights and knowledge, these are all powerful capital. These are powerful components of capital. So they own that stuff. They own it. I mean, you mentioned Musk several times. I like Musk. He's a great innovator. He's got some intellectual property. He's got some capital in form of intellectual property that is worth a lot. Hmm. You know, if it all goes boom tomorrow, he still has that technology. Hmm. It will still be valuable because it's part of the future, not part of the past. I mean, I wouldn't want to be the guy who is holding the formula for how to make kerosene or how to make gasoline.
Nah.
Who the hell cares?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. But if I've got battery technology, if I've got like Back to the Future, you know.
So it sounds like IP, intellectual property, design, and then income, but not just that. May be currently fiat producing income, but that could be any beans and chickens, as you already said. So that could be property if people have to rent from you. But given we may have a bank-based failure and a whole redrawing of how and a whole new transfer mechanism of value or that comes about, surely it can't be too big a leap because you need to bring the 99% that are slow-moving along with you. So there's still got to be a currency. What do you make of the IMF ascendancy and a SDR?
I think the IMF would love to be able to do that. I just want to point out something. You know that they're selling bullets by the billions in the United States. They keep selling out of bullets, right?
Yeah. I've heard that. And it's also the army as well, not just the citizens. The government.
Was shocking to me.
Yeah.
You know what was really shocking to me is I thought this was like, you know, people were angry and they're getting ready for a war or whatever. So I read a survey and the survey said, why are you buying all these bullets? They saw the bullets as currency.
Yeah.
They said, when it all goes to hell, and it's going to go to hell, I can exchange 1,000 bullets. Right? So, I mean, that was shocking to me. And it really sort of like highlighted where we are in this phase, where things that we didn't think were currency before become currency.
Yeah, well, it's like cigarettes in the old days in the prison system. Yeah,
100%, 100%.
Because security, you just think of all. If we've had such a Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we've had such an amount of time where all our base needs are taken care of, things like security and lodging and all of that, that we've all just been looking at the self-actualization end of the pyramid. But if in these times where there's massive structural quantum leaps and or Teutonic plate shifts, which are earthquakes in a kind of sense, things that you used to take for granted, you can no longer take for granted. None of us have lived through a global world war that my parents had to live through. And you have to start looking at the base of that pyramid, and then security is right there. And, you know, the one way to keep people from picking a fight with you or coming after your resources that could be rare or scarce because you've thought aloud is to keep heads down with a couple of rounds whizzing around the ears. So I can totally see that.
100%. You know, this modern world is really efficient in many ways, but it has also introduced huge amounts of risk. I did a study once. I read this book, and it caused me to do a study on the food chain around the world. Now, there was a couple of factors that really kind of shocked me. Number one is that the average distance that food travels to your plate is 1,500 miles. That's a long ways, huh? Mm. They also indicated that the entire food chain was controlled by essentially four or five companies.
Yeah.
Everything flowed through them.
Yeah,
and if there was some sort of a shock to that system, currency, you know, let's say that the dollar collapsed or the credit mechanism failed or whatever else could happen that would cause this to happen, there's only 4 days worth of food in the system.
Yeah.
4 days.
Yeah. Because for obvious reasons, storage, etc., and also freshness. And of course, when that happens, if the petrol stops running and the big truck doesn't go.
You can't.
Yeah.
And the system is dead, right? So it's a shocking reality to realize that we're all talking about a reset and we're talking about all these things as if, you know, I mean, not flippantly, but kind of like, oh, yeah, a reset. No. You know, they don't expect it to last long. I mean, the guys that are talking about this, they say, look, you know, if the dollar collapses and this happens, there'll be something that replaces it. It might take 3-4 months, but, you know, there'll be something to replace it. I mean, when they had hyperinflation in Germany, they went through several iterations of currency until they finally got it right with the Deutschmark and Hitler, right? So, it, you know, it takes time, but you have 3 or 4 months that you need to be worried about. You know, in that 3 or 4 months, if you haven't been sort of like prepared for this, you got problems.
I think globally, with everyone in the same problem, it could be a bit longer than the 3 or 4 months, personally. I think you need to...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree.
This is the trend of preparing and the guys that are looking to be as self-reliant as possible.
Exactly. Look at Venezuela. Venezuela right now is facing what we're talking about. Venezuela has absolutely collapsed. People are hunting cats and dogs in the street to eat because there's no food.
Yeah.
Why is there no food? The capital system has collapsed. It's collapsed. It's not that there's no people, you know, making food, growing food. There's no beef in the world.
I love that you did that, by the way, a microcosm view for what might be. I remember noticing when the Ukraine crisis kicked off and they cut all the amount of currency people could draw from banks and everyone tried to do a flight to cash, which is one of the reasons why I said hold cash, although we have a current war on cash at the moment.
Right.
And people that had Porsche Cayennes and fancy 4x4s were selling them for cash for 30% of their then secondhand market value.
So, yeah, what is it,
if
what
you were the
do?
Guy who had cash, you could have picked up some distressed cars, you know, beautiful vehicles and all sorts of things for nickels on the dime, as you might say. What you just said there in Venezuela is a very, very interesting. We actually, when we're looking forward and attempting to be a futurist, you just have to pay attention to what's going on around you in 100%. Similarly distressed areas, because the solution lies right therein, you know?
You know, it took 2.5 hours for the Titanic to sink. It took 2.5 hours. For 2.5 hours, people watched that ship sink.
Yeah.
And you know what blows my mind? 1,500 people died. Now, Francis, I know you to be a really intelligent guy, and I also know you to be a guy who is, you know, pretty creative about things. I have a feeling that if you were on the Titanic and you had 2.5 hours, you would have built a boat somehow. Right?
Yeah, I hope so.
Doesn't that blow your mind? It took 2.5 hours, and 1,500 people went down with the ship.
Yeah.
That just blows my mind. I mean, it's one of those things where I just go, how is this possible? But we're watching it. We're watching the collapse take place in phases. We're watching Venezuela disintegrate. We're watching
slow motion,
you know,
Titanic sinking.
We're watching Greece going through a debt crisis. We're watching Spain, you know, not far behind. We're watching all these things happen, but we're watching it like we're, you know, like we're sitting in our living room, you know, eating nachos and watching it on TV as if it was some sort of show on, right? It's happening. And you know, when you talk about currency, man, you and I've had this discussion. I know what you mean by, you know, by money, but other people may not know. But you know, it doesn't do you any good to hold a currency, because currencies could be they're worthless, right?
Correct.
But gold, silver, and you have to be able to exchange these things. That's why I always tell people, look, don't just buy 1 ounce coins. Buy, you know, quarter ounce coins. Buy some 1/8 ounce coins. You know, no one's going to have change.
You'll end up paying a whole bunch more than you have to. Yeah.
Yeah. No one's going to have change. No one's going to say, you know, here's your quarter piece of gold back, you know, for the half ounce you gave me. That's not, no one's going to have change. So it's an intelligent thing to stock up on things that could be used in exchange. I mean, I was blown away to think that people are stockpiling bullets because they see it as currency. But it's absolutely correct. It is currency. So is water. So is food. So is gold. So is silver. So are certain negotiable instruments that, you know, have, that are attached to real things. Nobody's going to want your Bugatti Veyron.
No.
Nobody's going to want it. It's not, you know. In fact, they're going to say, please don't give me the Bugatti Veyron, because it's going to draw attention. It uses too much petrol. I'll go from here to the end of the street and I'll have to kill somebody to get more petrol.
Exactly.
Right?
Because they're going to be coming after you for resources.
Yeah,
no, absolutely. I mean, the whole value. So in this time, and you mentioned this already, what we value when you were talking about marginal cost, suddenly we're going to swing in terms of value. When you start staring at the base of the Maslow's pyramid, you're going to start valuing your security, your life, and your ability to eat and keep people safe. So the currencies could be bullets and gold and silver coins.
And when that happens, we've redefined value, right?
Yeah.
We've redefined money.
But surely the elites, in terms of that which they plan, because you and I both agree that they're going to do what you call the controlled crash. So we're in catch 22 and we're going to ditch the plane. Right. And they already know that there's never a vacuum. What immediately, there will be a structural vacuum maybe for a while, which is while we'll be making hay with our bullets and coins, currency. But the longer run plan with the technology, the automation and all of that is going to start to seep through. How many, you know, this sounds like a transition that could be decades from when you crash to when we're in the semi-utopian. I don't ever believe there's a full-blown utopia of robots doing all our work for us and us focusing on just, you know, the high end valued items that are require.
It's hard to know, Francis, because I agree with you, but I want to put a codicil there that it's really hard to know because, you know, as much as the US has this military technology and all this stuff, there's also lots of other technologies that are really advanced that nobody brings out because, you know, you got to step through this stuff, right? I mean, you know, I talked about these scientists that I meet with and some of the things that discuss. And one of the premises they gave me was really quite interesting. They said, look, technology today is not based on complex things. They said, you put it together. He says, I could go to the local electronics store and I can buy the components to create a collider in my backyard. You know, it's not complex. It's just highly sophisticated. So it's not made up of a lot of things that cost a lot of money to put together. And so, you know, it really is an interesting thought to think that, you know, we are moving it. And it's really strange, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to go into this, and I apologize to your listeners if they think this is crazy, but there was a Star Trek movie once where the first time they went to light speed, right?
Yeah.
And you know what really blew my mind about that is that the way they presented the world was this really depleted place. You know, that people were like living in their backyards essentially. It wasn't a highly sophisticated technologically, but it wasn't highly sophisticated in terms of economics and social structure and all that. In fact, it looked like a ruined world, but they still had this amazing technology.
Yeah.
Right? And when I saw it, I thought, no, that's not realistic. But when I think about it now, I think that probably is very realistic.
Yeah.
You know, we could have an absolutely obliterated social structure because it's old and, you know, it's being transitioned into something else. But technology, the knowledge is out there. Once you understand physics, you can use it. You know,
we could have quite a mundane, sedentary, and almost barbaric existence within a highly technological environment.
Highly technologically advanced environment. Exactly. Yeah. In fact, that's the most likely transitional criteria, because until the way people think, until
so
people...
So is Star Trek the new Matrix? Because everybody talks about the Matrix being the template for understanding, you know, all of that. Maybe the Star Trek is the new... search for a headline for us, I mean, maybe that's it. You know, we're going to have all this technology, but, you know, only Darth Vader seems to live like a lord, and the rest are scratching in the dirt with some ray beams.
You know, the advantage of technology is that your base minimum things tend to get met, right? The standard of living kind of comes up universally.
Yes, should do.
But you lose, being wealthy doesn't mean anything anymore. Right? I mean, it means something in terms of power.
There'll just be a new value or a new currency by which wealth is measured.
New value, exactly. That's the thing that I really want to try to get across is that this controlled burn has as its ultimate goal, has as its ultimate end, a new definition of money. What constitutes wealth? What constitutes power? It will be new. And if you're one of the elite that are causing this to happen, or at least facilitating the sinking of the ship, you've already seen this, and you've already gone to the place that you're going to. You know, Musashi always said, "Strike where the guy is going, not where he was." That's what a genius swordsman does. He strikes where the man is going, not where he was. And that's what the elite do. The elite move to where it's going, not to where it was.
Yeah. They don't. And so where is that? If we were to write a couple of bullet points down for the listeners, where is it going that they should be striking with what?
I think that, you know, the message needs to almost be Buddhism. You know, I mean, not, you know, I'm not a Buddhist, but you know, I'm not promoting Buddhism, but I'm, that sort of lifestyle seems to be what epitomizes the future, right?
In other words, want for very little, and live a simple existence and be self-reliant. You live a
simple but highly sophisticated existence.
Yeah, intelligence resistant.
Right. So it's very simple, but it's highly sophisticated.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't need 17 Ferraris and 3 Lamborghinis in your garage, right? No. That's a bad application of capital, right?
Yeah.
Especially since the future most likely looks like something where we have Uber on steroids, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know how many people I know that are getting rid of their cars because of Uber? I mean, it's amazing. They said, this is crazy. It cost me 10 grand a month to have my bloody car, and I can do Uber for $3.
Yeah.
For the amount that I drive.
Yeah.
Right? So that
And they, by the way, have got Google as major investments. A large amount of the British establishment elites are invested in them. There's no doubt they're going to get pushed all the way. The judge has ruled in their favor, sidestepping the black cabs here in London, who claim that they are, because they're the only ones licensed in this, in central London to actually fare in a vehicle. And they got around that, saying that all the faring was going through at a controlled center outside of London, and that all that's happening is the delivery of the services being provided there.
100%.
And that got swum through. So I've no doubt that they will prevail over the traditional. And that will become a new, and they've been, China has actually released a rival to Uber, purely because it's almost like another tracking element that you want to have the intel on.
It's the Internet of Things.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that sharing economy.
It's also that information that they get, knowing who you are, where you are and where you're going and at what time. It's that data that they collect as well.
So if you want to align yourself to the future, you have to align yourself to a simpler but very, very highly sophisticated lifestyle. And that, in my mind, is aligned to where we're going. That, you know,
so that's capital, prepping, having a self-reliant home, water, lights, all run off solar, et cetera, recycling your water, because I see that CEO of Nestle says the rain that falls on your face is not your water, and you could be charged at some point in that future for this.
Yeah. I mean, it's entirely possible that they're going to charge a carbon tax for your breathing.
One day.
You know? Yeah. I mean, you know, this is where it's all going. The legislation is being created for this, right? So, I mean, these are all absurdities.
So things that we've taken for free, for example, for free before, is going to be taken away for us.
Yes. And things that we used to pay for will become free.
Yeah.
It's going to be, it's going
to
be
near 10 to zero.
Yeah. 10 to zero. I mean, you know, a lot of the guys who do modeling on this stuff, they say, well, it becomes free. You know, one of the reasons why bread was able to be free in Rome was because their technology of grinding wheat and delivering the wheat, and, you know, they had slavery, which we could have machines, and so they had no real labor cost, was so efficient that, I mean, the cost of bread was negligible. So the state picked up the tab. They said, you know, we'll pick it up.
It's good PR, yeah.
It's, you know, it's you get something for your taxes, you know.
Yeah.
You pay taxes, you get bread, right?
Yeah.
So people didn't mind so much paying taxes, right? That kind of thing starts to happen. You know, for me, I'm trying to get to the point where I understand that the Warren Buffett style of investment. You know, you buy value. You don't speculate at trying to make money. Trying to make money in investment is ridiculous now. It's crazy. It's crazy to try to get rich through investment today. I know that sounds like something stupid, but it's true. You can't get rich through investment today. What you get rich through, if you're lucky, is through speculation. And speculation could go either way.
Yeah,
you could win.
You. I do say, though, for the long run, that everyone should have a forced savings that you put in a tracker and you buy the shares in those assets.
But buy intelligently, right? You buy you buy value. You don't you know, speculate on whether the
And would that be a tech NASDAQ tracker then for you then, given the way you're speaking?
Well, for me, I would take specific I'm a Warren Buffett fan, right? And Buffett stays away from technology for a specific reason.
Until recently. He's Apple.
Yeah, but he's not
I think
really,
that's PR though, personally.
Yeah, and I don't think that you could I think that the definition of what technology is changing a bit, right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking for sustainable sustainable companies that have track record and history. And I mean, you know, it's pretty likely that no matter what happens in the world, someone's going to be buying Coca-Cola. You know, that's pretty likely. As long as it exists, someone will buy it. Someone will exchange something for Coca-Cola. You know, it's something that is going to it's part of our DNA almost, right? So things like that are
won't that shift as well? You know, the war on sugar and all of that. I mean, I think that was right for the 50s and 60s, and we've run well on it through the 80s and now. I don't know if
We have to replace it with a new Coke, right? It's not going to be the Coca-Cola that you and I maybe grew up with, but it's a brand name. I mean, the brand is incredibly valuable. You'd be stupid to let it go, right? So replace it with something else, you know, that is right for the time, but still has the brand. But the point is that if you listen to the new industrial state. The new industrial state says that at some point in time, there's going to be very, very few manufacturers of just about everything in the world, right?
Now that's the book I think you were referring to, and I want to hear your take on that. So this will be a very little option. I mean, we see it already with the big brands. If you buy a VW, it doesn't matter whether you get a Skoda, a Golf, or a Passat or variety, a lot of the part sharing, the economies of scale, this all keeps going. I mean, even the Bentley GT, which I was fortunate to have for a while, was sharing platform with a VW Phaeton, which turned out a flop. But I mean, so now those brands have all been consolidated into one vehicle company, and then it's competing with, you know, BMW, Mercedes. And if you want a quality prestige car maker, you're there. Or maybe you're buying the top end of Ford or something like that. But there's not too many choices. Now, that's going to get further entrenched. So the sort of oligarchy corporates. And then take us to the logical extreme of where in the book we all end up, where you eventually end up.
We have sort of an example of it now. We have something that exists in the market today. I mean, you know, cell phone technology is going to be replaced by VoIP very, very soon. But still, we have cell phones, and there is actually a component of the cell phone, the part, the GSM component, the part that actually makes it a cell phone, is that's called a widget. I mean, you know, it's quite funny because, you know, widget is, you know, the universal term. But it's actually called a widget, and there's one manufacturer in the world for widgets. So those widgets get sold to all these different people who then take those widgets and they do a higher integration into a system that has different components. I mean, Google's coming out with this phone pretty soon that is it's like a Meccano set. You can take it apart. You can take different pieces off of it and put new pieces in. You know, you just clip a thing and pull out a section and you build the phone according to what you want. So that phone never really goes away. You just upgrade it as it comes along with new components. You just clip in and clip out, clip in and clip out. So what Galbraith said is, he said, look, the way the economy is going, the way that things are moving, the way the direction that we're headed, the economies of scale and technology and all that sort of thing, he was way ahead of his time. He basically said, look, there's only going to be a few manufacturers in the world, but those manufacturers are going to be producing very generic products. So they're going to produce a television set as an example, but someone will take that television set and they will put a bell and whistle on it, brand it, and sell it. Maybe they'll sell it. They'll sell it with something else. They'll sell it with some different component. They'll sell it with content and attached or whatever. And that's where it's all going
to
become
money in the customization to try break the uniformity. Everybody doesn't want the same product.
100%. I was talking to a guy pretty recently. He was a Swedish guy who happened to be a very, very high ranking local guy for a cell phone manufacturer. What's the guy's?
Samsung?
No, Swedish.